On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kahn. Thanks for being here. You've aligned to Republican State Representative Joel Kitchens of Sturgeon Bay as we discuss the future of education. He had a bill that would have required schools to give reading tests multiple times a year to 4K through second graders. It was vetoed by the governor Friday. Are you the parent whose child has struggled to learn to read? Do you think they would benefit from more rigorous testing? Do you think the standardized testing is a productive thing or a bad thing? 800-642-1234. Representative Joel Kitchens' district includes Door and Kewaunee counties, plus areas of Brown and Manitowoc counties. Representative Kitchens, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So the governor vetoed your bill, saying that it lacks new funding to carry out the changes and the goals of additional mandatory testing for these young children. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think the bill is really being mischaracterized as being more testing. This is not standardized testing. These are quick screens that take a minute or two that would be done multiple times a year so that we can identify these children that are struggling to read and put plans in place to get them reading. So it's totally being mischaracterized. I'm very disappointed that the governor chose to veto this. It did have bipartisan support, and we are in such a crisis situation in Wisconsin with our reading. We have to be doing something differently.
So as you see to do things differently, what would these tests give you in terms of being able to set these children on a path where they could read?
Sure. Well, we heard from so many parents around the state who thought that their kids were struggling to read when they were in the first and second grade. But when they went to the teachers, they would say, oh, you know, just read to him more, he'll be fine. Then they get to fourth grade when they do the standardized test and they find out their kid can't read. And by that point, they are so far behind that it's very, very difficult to catch up. And we know that those kids that can't read by fourth grade, their chances of graduating, of leading productive lives, drops dramatically. So if we have these early interventions, if we catch these kids, you know, in kindergarten, in first grade, and put in the proper plans to get them back on track, you know, we can keep them out of special education, we can keep them in school. So, I think it's really vital. The first step has to be that we identify these kids.
I was struck by, across the chamber, in the other chamber, Senator Lena Taylor, who said, look, we already do the testing. We already know we are failing. We already know we're rock bottom. I get tired, she said, of us studying our way into a circle. What is your response to her?
Well, she obviously misunderstands what this is. Again, this is not more standardized testing. This is screens to catch these kids early and get them back on the right track. Yes, we do know we have a problem. We don't need more testing to show that we have a problem. We need more testing so that we can address the problems and get these kids reading. We have the worst achievement gap between Blacks and whites in Wisconsin in the country, dead last. Our African-American students are dead last in reading. We need to reach these kids early. It's our one chance of really, you know, breaking the cycle of poverty that we see.
You know, something that struck me was, like, where do we find the four-year-olds? Because not every elementary school has 4K, and certainly not full-day 4K. Why not first get 4K straight across the state and perhaps make it full day 4K and then go about doing all the testing?
Well, I mean, I'm supportive of 4K, and I think most of our districts in the state have that, but that's a bigger and sort of a different argument. You know, we have to deal with what we have right now, I guess. So yeah, we want to reach them as soon as we can. Actually, I mean, if you look at the science of brain development, even 4K is too late for some of these kids as far as brain development. So yeah, I would love to reach them earlier, but that's a bigger separate argument, I guess.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Joel Kitchens, a Republican state assembly person representing Door and Kewaunee counties. We're discussing education issues, bills he's backing, with your thoughts on reading. 800-642-1234. Let's go to Annalisa in Green Bay. Hi, Annalisa. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have several. First of all, I don't think this is a role for the legislature. This belongs in the Department of Public Instruction. Secondly, I think this is a ludicrous idea. I think it's over control, and it's totally underestimating teachers. good teachers are assessing children all the time. So that is my comment. I would also say that the role of parents is to read with children at home. And that is one place where parents can be involved in a productive way to help the child read better. Thank you.
Thank you, Annalisa. Representative Kitchens, you know, Annalisa making the point that teachers are doing these little checks all the time.
You know, I think that there are districts around the state that are doing a great job with it, but our education establishment has really not embraced these changes, these different methods of teaching reading in Wisconsin like they have in other states. Mississippi, which traditionally has been dead last in the country, now has soared past us because they've adopted these new strategies. So, you know, it's sort of like, you know, when she talks about parents reading to their children, of course that's important, but it's sort of like a golf swing where if you have a bad swing, practicing the same swing over and over is not going to make you a better golfer. Reading is not intuitive for children, for most children. They have to be taught the proper way to do it. And, you know, I think when I listened to the DPI secretary and her comments about this, sort of about how, well, it's not really that bad. We just, you know, parents just need to read more to their kids. I mean, if you look at how far we have fallen, our African-American students are now dead last in the country, as I mentioned. That's 32 places they've fallen since 1992. We are not moving in the right direction. So to think that we're just going to put more money into doing the same thing over and over is, in her words, ludicrous.
Well, explain, what are the costs associated with this in providing individual reading plans for students?
Sure. Well, this bill does provide the funding for the assessments themselves for the districts to get the software and learn how to do that. You know, this is just the first step. This is not going to solve it by itself. Representative Thiesfeld, who's the chair of the Education Committee, he and I have been working on getting funding for more reading coaches to teach teachers the proper way to implement these programs. They were not taught this in college, most of them. So that's going to be one of the costs. As far as the long-term cost, if we can keep these kids out of special education and reach them early, that dramatically reduces costs. So, I think if you look at the big picture of this is going to save us money.
So, but in terms of millions of dollars, what would have cost to implement this type of directive?
Well, like I said, the screenings themselves, we will pay for. So that's not, you know, there's no cost to that. Again, we will, you know, the intention is that this is the first step and we're going to hire more reading coaches to go to the districts and teach these teachers the newer methods of teaching reading.
Let's go to David now in Glenwood City. Hi, David.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes. And you're a teacher.
Yes, I am. I'm a teacher. I am in my 15th year of education, work a lot with reading and reading data. One point, I agree with a great deal of what he's saying, disagree with some things. I just really want to emphasize that scores are directly correlated to economics here. I mean, yes, we need to do reading screens. Yes, we need to do a lot of the things that you're mentioning, but we also need to be aware of the underlying economic causes. Part of the reason why some reading scores are low is because of the lack of support in the community and the lack of support measures we have in those communities.
You're saying that it is indicative of other issues as well that are happening in the child's life. Is that what I'm hearing, David?
Well, we can hire reading coaches if there are even people who want to be teachers. But at the same time, we need people to have community support behind what we're doing. And you know, a test is one thing, but, you know, there's wider issues here, and it speaks to larger social safety net issues.
Larger social safety net issues. Representative Kitchens.
Oh, I agree with him completely. I mean, when students struggle in school, that's just, you know, one aspect. It generally is. I mean, if you look at our school report cards, the districts with higher poverty levels always have lower report cards. That's a fact. But education is our one chance to break that. And if we don't teach these kids how to read early, they will not break that cycle. So that's where these early interventions and getting them reading, getting them back on track, that's why it's so important. But again, no, certainly the social, all those things interact with this. And that's, you know, this is just one aspect of it.
We have Republican Representative Joel Kitchens of Sturgeon Bay, Vice Chair of the Assembly Committee on Education. He's sharing ideas on learning in Wisconsin schools. How much involvement should the state have in setting the agenda and curriculum for public schools? What questions do you have for the assemblyperson? What should the legislature prioritize in its oversight of public education? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Reading proficiency in the early years is considered to be a predictor of academic success later in life. We're talking with Representative Joel Kitchens about the latest effort to make sweeping changes in how reading is taught in schools. Also discussing bills on incorporating a civics curriculum. What should the legislature prioritize in its oversight of public education? 800-642-1234. Republican Representative Joel Kitchens of Sturgeon Bay is with us for nine more minutes. Let's bring in John now in Eau Claire. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I admit I'm a little bit old-fashioned. I grew up in poverty. I went to a one-room school. We did not have kindergarten. When I got to school, I could read because my mother read to me a lot. My sister read to me a lot. This is all about good parenting. There isn't enough money in Wisconsin to throw at the school system to make up for incompetent parenting. We've got drugs. We've got constant televisions and social media occupying parents, too much alcohol, and we've forgotten what parental responsibility is. I applaud the legislator for trying to develop new ways of teaching kids once they get to school, but we must recognize that we have a parenting problem.
Representative, thank you. Yeah, thank you, John. Representative Kitchens, parents not doing their part in preparing these kids for school.
Well, certainly parents are the most important teachers that a kid has, but there are a lot of very good parents who do have kids that struggle to read. Some of them are dyslexic. There are, you know, different things going on there. So absolutely, parenting is the most important issue, but that doesn't make up for all of the problems that we have. And we have to deal with society as it is, sort of not as we wish it would be, I guess. So we're trying to get these kids back on track who often got off to a very poor start, who didn't have, you know, stable family situations.
Let's bring in Michelle in Middleton, who is a teacher. Michelle, hi. What is your perspective here?
Hi, thank you so much for being on the show. I am letting me speak. My perspective as a teacher is that, yes, we always need to focus on reading, but at the same time, there are issues of ELL students not getting enough support. Our class sizes are way too large. There's pretty much not even enough money going into education at all in the state of Wisconsin, and we need to focus more on making sure that our class sizes are staying down and that we're getting trained paraeducators who are getting paid a quality wage so that they want to do the work so that we can have help in our classrooms.
Michelle, thank you. Michelle brings up a number of points there, but essentially it is funding at the end of the day, Representative Kitchens.
Well, I wouldn't say that funding is everything. That's sort of whenever we discuss any change like this, that's the first thing. Oh, you just need to give us more money. And I'm not going to argue about the whole education budget right now, but this is important stuff. I mean, the most important thing that we can do for young people is get them to read. The saying goes that in the first few years, kids learn to read, and after that, they read to learn. If they don't learn to read, the rest of it is irrelevant. So, you know, I want to really focus on that.
I want to move on here to civics. You voted for a bill that would require civics education in grades kindergarten through 12. What are students not learning about by way of how government functions?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's vital for a democracy, of course, for people to be involved and for them to understand government. So I do think that it's important that they learn how our government functions. And they, you know, we need, for a democracy to succeed, we need an educated electorate. So I think that's the reasoning behind it. Most districts are doing the job on this. There are some that are not. So I think it's you know, it's just sort of setting a standard that all kids need to learn the basics of government.
Where do you see lawmakers on this particular front in terms of civics and what should be taught?
Well, you know, again, I think that kids just need to learn the basics of how government works. And, you know, and I think most of us, I don't recall the vote on that, but the majority of, you know, of us supported that idea.
You support a bill that would restrict how schools can teach or talk about race and sex discrimination. What are your concerns?
Well, you know, I think that we hear from a lot of parents that have concerns about how their kids are being, about how these issues are being taught in the schools. Now, you know, the governor didn't sign that bill. I never expected the governor to sign it, but I do think it's an important conversation for us to have. I think parents need to be involved in these things. You know, as has been mentioned by some of the callers, parents are the most important teachers and they should be discussing these things. If they are, it's not as big a deal. But so many parents just sort of trust the schools to educate their kids. And I think this has been sort of a wake-up call recently for a lot of parents to become involved and you know, and look over what their kids are being taught in schools.
Yeah, supporters of the bill had called for a tighter rein on what students are learning about the role of racism and gender discrimination in our country's past and present. How do you want that changed, or what do you want classrooms to be talking about when they talk about racism in America?
You know, I think I think we should have those discussions absolutely in schools. In my opinion, we certainly shouldn't be telling people not to teach about past racism in the country or present racism for that matter. But it just needs to be presented as these are ideas, not that this is doctrine. This is the way it is. So, you know, it's just, again, I certainly favor open discussion of all these issues. And our past is not always pretty.
Talking with Joel Kitchens, a Republican state assembly person representing Door in Kewaunee counties, as we look at legislation, he's backing bills moving at the Capitol as they relate to education. Your thoughts as well at 800-642-1234. Becky would like to bring up civics. Hi, Becky. What is on your mind?
Oh, hello, and thank you so much for taking the call. And I'm very, very glad that members of our state government are concerned about and focused on the importance of education, especially critical things like reading, literacy, and civics. But when he dismissed the issues of money and he says, oh, just throwing money at it, if you look at the bottom line of how much we are not spending in the schools as compared to just 10, 20, 30 years ago, the amount of spending hasn't actually kept up with cost of living, keeping the lights on, doing repairs in the schools, and of course, paying living wages, not just to the teachers, but to all the rest of the support staff in the schools. When places like Mississippi are paying more, and unfortunately, I know young people who've gotten their education degrees in Wisconsin, who've gone to other states, even to the Detroit area, because they were paying a living wage for people starting out in teaching better than what Wisconsin was. That is a crime when we're actually exporting teachers to other states. Young people who have all the latest information on how to teach reading and civics and other things, and they leave our state because they can no longer be a professional in this state and pay off their loans and be a taxpayer that would
Becky,
be part of the solution.
Yeah, Becky, thank you. Representative Kitchens, you know, funding education is a central issue, as Becky says here. What is your response?
Well, certainly funding is a big issue, and I'm not dismissing that. It's certainly one of our largest expenditures each time we do the budget. So I'm not going to dismiss that. I do think, though, that people look at Wisconsin and they say, oh, we have a teacher shortage just because you're not paying teachers enough. There's a national teacher shortage. This isn't just Wisconsin. In fact, we are well above average in the number of teachers that our shortage is not as bad as most states, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So the idea that somehow there's this mass exodus from Wisconsin because it's so much better everywhere else, it's just really not true.
I want to leave a bit of space for the pandemic here. We're still in it. What should the state do to continue fighting COVID, to help businesses in your area that are struggling? What are next steps?
Wow. Well, that's a change of pace there. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, we're moving in the right direction on it, certainly. And I think that that's going to, continue as we've been doing. I think that we're moving in the right direction on COVID.
So you feel like when you talk with, businesses in Sturgeon Bay, that they feel supported?
Yeah, I really have not been hearing a lot of complaints about how things are being done. I think in different, in Madison, certainly when I'm down there, they still have the mask mandate and that type of thing. We don't have that up here. I'm not hearing a lot of complaints about it up here, I guess.
Representative Kitchens, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. And just to wrap up, though, I would like to say that when you look at the other states and how they're doing with reading, Wisconsin is falling like a rock. And to continue to do the same thing and think that it's going to get better is not the path we should be on. So
appreciate it. We have a 1 second here. News update is next on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're exploring the newly formed Office of Health Equity, housed in DHS, the Department of Health Services, charged with implementing policies and programs to address root causes of health inequities. Do you live in a food desert or have lead in your pipes? Do you have trouble seeing a doctor or filling prescriptions due to their cost? What does health equity mean to you and your family? It's 800-642-1234. Michelle Robinson is director of the Office of Health Equity. She holds her doctorate in sociology. Michelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much.
Good morning. Well, tell us about the new office. What can you tell us about the goals and the aims that you wish to accomplish?
Yeah. So one of the things I'd like to note is that this is Monday and this is the start of week three for me in my new role as director of the Office of Health Equity. But broadly speaking, the Office of Health Equity is an office that was created to address the fact that we know that health is influenced by many, many factors. Oftentimes when we think about health and health outcomes, most of us tend to think about behaviors, whether a person eats well, whether a person exercises, whether they have health insurance or if they see a doctor. But what we know is that where we work, the things that we do for work, our education levels, how much money we earn or how much wealth we have access to, the homes we live in, whether or not we are exposed to environmental contaminants or other kinds of things that might be harmful for our health, or even just whether or not our communities are safe places to live. All of those things impact and shape one's health potential and health outcomes. And we know that government plays a big role in most of those things. We can enact policies that can help create opportunities for folks to advance their education or shape income potential or wealth, or ensure that a community is not exposed to environmental toxins. And so when we're thinking about this office and we're thinking about its mission, we're thinking about the ways in which government can be leveraged in ways to advance health equity through the programs and policies and decisions that we make, but also correcting the ways in which government may have exacerbated or create health inequities. And we know that that's true because of our nation's history around policymaking, and specifically as we think about issues of race and racism and the ways in which a policy has been structured in ways that have created advantages and disadvantages for people based on their skin color. And so as we're thinking about this office and what we're trying to do here, we're really trying to lean into DHS's vision and mission. So the OHE has a specific mission, and our mission is that we want to make DHS, a place where equity and justice are embedded as a cornerstone of all the work that we do and how we serve all communities so that we can allow each Wisconsinite to live their best life. As you know, that the mission of DHS is to protect and promote the health and safety of all Wisconsinites. What this office's job is to ensure that we are truly doing that, that no matter where someone lives, where what geography they were born in, their zip code, their educational level, their income, the color of their skin, their gender identity or their sexuality, that they are that they live in a community, and that we are a state that people and individuals and us as a collective community have what we need to live our greatest life and achieve our greatest sort of health potential.
Yeah, what you say there reminds me of even how someone's zip code can tell, you know, about life expectancy, and someone in a nearby zip code can have a life expectancy so much longer than a zip code across town or the next zip code over. And you know, I think that also speaks to the work of what you're trying to do to ensure that all Wisconsinites have access to a healthy lifestyle.
That they have access to the resources, the supports, the assets, the things that they need in order to optimize and have the greatest opportunity to live their best health potential.
What is a day-to-day life like on the job in your office? How will you accomplish these goals?
Yeah, well, you know, the work right now is really trying to identify what those specific objectives and goals are going to be, what our priorities are going to be over, you know, I'm hoping the next 3 to 5 years. And that includes engaging with our internal stakeholders, our subject matter experts throughout the agency, all of the program leaders and staff who are working and doing tremendous work within the Department of Health Services. But it also involves engaging with our external stakeholders, our community members, the folks who we're doing this work on behalf of. There are also some additional opportunities. There's the Governor's Health Equity Council, which has been doing work over the last year and will be releasing a plan next year.
And you were on that council.
Yes, I am on the
council. You are, I should say, active.
Yes, I am also a vice chair of that council. Of course, those are two different roles. But yes, that the work of that council will definitely shape and inform the office, as is our internal organization, our Health Equity and Diversity Inclusion Council, which is working on sort of the workforce pieces of this and leading and advising that work internally. There's also the Governor's Health, not Governor's Health, but the Governor's Equity and Inclusion Advisory Council. So there's a lot of sort of work that's happening in the state that we're really hoping to leverage to inform and shape our priorities on top of, you know, our state health assessment and our state health plans, trying to take all that information in and really sort of synthesize it in order to figure out where are those opportunities, where are those biggest gaps, where's that capacity most needed.
We're talking with Michelle Robinson, Director of the Office of Health Equity, becoming the first director of the new office within the Department of Health Services. She holds a doctorate in sociology. You can join in. What should the state do to improve health equity? Is Wisconsin accessible? What should the state do to improve accessibility? What health inequities have you noticed in your life, in your neighborhood, your community? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Now, your office will work in tandem with the Minority Health Program. What is the difference between the Minority Health Program and what your new office will do?
Yes. So the Minority Health Program has been brought into the office. And so the Minority Health Program is a small but critically important program that our state administers. It allows us to provide grants up to $50,000 to community agencies and organizations. And these organizations over the years of the Minority Health Program have done tremendous work to normalize conversations on mental wellness in tribal communities, or work aimed at preventing chronic disease through the work of community health workers, or providing fitness activities for low-income minority middle school students. Lots of important on-the-ground work, working with the folks who are most in need of services and programs. But the Minority Health Program is only one piece of both the Office of Health Equity, but also the work of DHS, writ large as it relates to the work that we're doing to address specifically issues related to minority health, or in the case of minority health program, economically disadvantaged, historically marginalized people of color. And so the Office of Health Equity is sort of looking more broadly than the minority health program, which is really specific to one population or a population of economically disadvantaged minority groups as defined by statute. The Office of Health Equity is really around thinking much more broadly about place, about gender and sexuality and race and ethnicity, and how all of those factors also shape one's health outcomes and divergences in those outcomes.
I see. Thank you. Let's bring on a caller now. Denise is joining us from Viroqua. Hi, Denise.
Good morning, and thank you for having this show. My husband is Black. I am white, and we live in Southwest rural Wisconsin, and it is extremely difficult to find Black providers. We have found that the majority of the white providers we have gone to do not acknowledge or understand how Black health is different than white health in regards to skin, pain, et cetera. And I'm wondering, what is this department going to do to promote and encourage Black doctors? There's one in a 70-mile radius. And I'd like to know what this program or this department is going to do to help alleviate the scarcity of Black doctors in our community. Thank you, Denise.
Thank you. Go ahead, Michelle Robinson.
Yeah, Denise, thank you for your question. You know, this challenge that you're raising is one that we know is true throughout the state, but also throughout most of the nation. Despite the gains of as it relates to diversity and pipeline and healthcare, there is still a lot of work that we need to do to increase the number of Black African-American physicians, physician assistants, nurses, that representation throughout most of the healthcare continuum. And so I think that, you know, there are programs that have existed, some exist in our state, but may not have yet been expanded specifically for African-American medical students, but programs such as incentives to work in rural communities or in communities that have lower racial and ethnic diversity. There are programs that help pay off student loans for doctors or healthcare providers that are willing to work in communities like that. Cover cost of training and things of that sort. So I think that there are some ideas out there that we should be thinking about as a state as it relates to how do we both, as we are bringing in students of color, as we're bringing in Black and African-American physicians into our medical programs, how do we ensure that Wisconsin can be a place where they see themselves remaining post medical school or post their formal training.
Michelle Robinson, first director of DHS's new Office of Health Equity. Her work will focus on programs to break down barriers to DHS services, improve outreach and health programs. What would you like this new office to focus on? What should its priorities be? What barriers have you had to overcome to get access to the public healthcare system in our state? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Michelle Robinson here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Health Department has named its director for the newly formed Office of Health Equity that'll work to address health disparities, promote inclusion with an eye on making DHS programs more accessible to people from all walks of life. Michelle Robinson was named director last month, has been on the job 3 weeks, holds a doctorate in sociology. Previously, she was the director of the Office of the Inspector General and the Equity and Systems Change Research and Policy Officer at the Department of Children and Families. She's with us for about 9 more minutes. Can you explain how that previous job in Children and Families informs what you take into your new role?
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, for one, as the Equity and Systems Change Research and Policy Officer, I had the opportunity to really think about health equity more broadly. So one of the challenges about, a lot of our current conversations around health equity is that it's often reduced to health access or health care. And as I kind of started off this morning's conversation saying is that it's much, much broader than that. As the Equity and Systems Change Research and Policy Officer, which is a mouthful, at DCF, I really got the chance to really think about the ways in which agencies that are outside of the typical health providing agencies can think about themselves and the roles that they play as far as stewards of equity and also potential contributors of equity. So when we're thinking about access to childcare, when we're thinking about access to economic security, jobs, income, livable wages, when we're thinking about things like how access or connection or interaction with the child welfare system or child support can particularly shape or harm communities. That was a lot of the work that I got to do there, which is part of how I ended up being the representative, the designee for the GHEC, the Governor's Health Equity Council for DCF originally. So thinking about that and thinking about what that means from a education standpoint and a systems change standpoint, when we're seeing our programs as not just simply as services, but as services and strategies that actually have health outcomes for individuals and for families and for communities. It sort of shifts, I think, both the importance of the work and also our lens of thinking about how we make decisions about program functioning and program design and those types of things. And then, of course, as the former Inspector General of the Department of Children and Families, what I really benefited from or what I take into this new role is the importance of understanding the design of programs and thinking about the effectiveness and efficiency and how we can create programs that are really truly empowered to do the things that they are designed or tasked with achieving as far as their program goes.
In terms of effectiveness and efficiency and the tasks at hand, how would you characterize the work that the Governor's Health Equity Council has done thus far? I mean, it was created in 2019, I believe.
Yeah, it was created in, the EO was created in March of 2019 and the committee was stood up in September of 2020. Mm-hmm. And the work that they have been doing over the last 6 months has been focused on developing those recommendations. So the council is structured around sort of four main subcommittees, one focused on policies, one focused on programs, the other one focused on sort of understanding power and representation, and a last one that's really thinking about how do we frame and talk about health equity so that instead of health equity being seen as a provocative thing, that people understand that health equity is something we should all want to achieve. You know, I like to think about, you know, we often hear this this saying, health is wealth. So if health is wealth, then the wealth of our nation is embodied and dependent upon the health of the people who reside here. And so we really have to be committed to ensuring that, you know, we're doing what we can to ensure that we have a healthy population, that we can, individuals, regardless of their backgrounds, can achieve their most optimal health status, because that is what's going to ensure the vitality of our communities, of our society, and of our nation in the long run.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Michelle Robinson, who's director of the new Office of Health Equity, first director of the newly formed office. You can join in. What does equity mean to you? How do you think DHS should respond to health disparities? 800-642-1234. In the Office of Health Equity, can you give us a sense of what you see in terms of the budget and the staffing and the allocation that has been given to this office as it begins?
Well, as I said a bit a while ago, the work right now is really around trying to figure out the design and what our goals are. You know, what I am really committed to is ensuring that I build a sustainable structure that is designed to and designed in a way to maximize its ability to achieve those goals. And so right now, that is the work we're doing, is figuring out what is going to be our core priorities and then being able to connect the resources to those.
Something along the lines that Denise had said, you know, in terms of the lack of physicians of color, Wisconsin healthcare providers and UW researchers have also been studying these health disparities for a while. And one, for instance, is that rural areas are underserved with colorectal cancer screening, and urban areas lag in childhood vaccinations. So as you try to make sense of what priorities, what is on top, which health disparities are really, you know, on your radar and something you know you need to address?
So chronic health issues are pretty personally important to me as a person who, if you ever heard my story, or if you know me personally, you know that my family, I come from a family that's particularly burdened by autoimmune diseases and cancer, and those two things have led to a quite low life expectancy for the women in my family, especially. But as it relates to sort of that personal and the, you know, the work, it's trying to figure out, like, what are those, what is the areas of need, of greatest need in the state? And also, like, hopefully, ideally, what possible options are there that sort of allows us to understand sort of these cross-cutting issues? Because the reality is that disparities tell us about disproportionality, right? It tells us about communities that are perhaps more burdened by a particular outcome, but in reality, what disparities often hide, at least unless you're a statistician or someone who talks data a lot, is that there's a distribution. And so, you know, even in the example you just provided about access and healthcare access being sort of a challenge in rural communities versus urban communities, like, we know that there are healthcare access challenges that exist between urban and rural communities. And I think what's really important is thinking about the ways in which the particular context of those different communities shape differently what those access problems are. For example, in rural communities, it's often literally the lack of a provider there. Whereas in urban communities, there could be things like transportation differences or trust issues, or just access challenges as far as the cost, the prohibitive cost of healthcare and things of that sort. And so for me, I'd like to really think about trying to address whatever those outcomes we focus on, being able to sort of hold the complexity of the story, mm-hmm. instead of making the story seem like this is this community's issue and this is not this community's issue, really showing the ways in which there are these shared stakes and that what might be different is
it's the interconnected burden. Yes. Michelle Robinson, thank you for joining us. Michelle Robinson is director of the Office of Health Equity. This is a State Capitol Report, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.